Class is in session. You're listening to Squat University by Dr. Aaron Horshick.
Let's go!
Now, let's start the show.
Hey, what's up, podcast listeners? Thank you so much for checking out today's show. This is episode 74 of the Squat University podcast. The goal with each and every one of these shows is to bring you as much value-packed content to help you move better in the gym and in life, decrease your body's aches and pains, and help you reach your true athletic potential. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by my very first sponsor, Gainsbox. Gainsbox is a box of the month club specifically designed for those interested in all things weight training. So if you're a weightlifter, a powerlifter, a CrossFitter, or you just love going to the gym and lifting some big weight, this box was designed for you and your interests. Every month they send out a box right to your doorstep with a different mix of things like workout apparel, new shirts, shorts, different supplements, training gear and equipment, things like that. The last few boxes I've received have included some supplements, a shaker bottle, a new pre-workout with a number of servings, and a training shirt. So a pretty cool box altogether. If you go on their website right now and you subscribe at thegainsbox.com, and use the code SQUATUNIVERSITY, all one word, not two, you'll receive a special bonus box valued at $70 with your subscription. So that's the code SQUATUNIVERSITY, all one word, on thegainsbox.com. So on to today's episode. In this episode, I had the honor of interviewing Travis Mash. Now, if you don't know who Travis is, you need to. He is the coach of MASH Elite Weightlifting Team, a team that includes a number of up-and-coming, amazing weightlifters. He himself has been in the strength game for many years, having competed at an elite level in powerlifting and weightlifting, all things that we talk about in this podcast, along with some key tips that can help you become a better weightlifter, lift with better technique, and set some new PRs. So without further ado, let's get to today's show. All right, Travis, thank you so much for coming on today's show. For everyone out there who does not know of you and all the things that you do, can you just give us a brief introduction?
Yeah, I'm Coach Mash, Travis, whatever you want to call me, but I coach some of the best Olympic weightlifters in the world. I was a pretty good weightlifter. I was a much better powerlifter. I was, at the time, the strongest 100-kilo lifter in the world, 220-pounder, you know, for the powerlifters, mostly talking pounds, but... I totaled 24-10, and then I totaled 24-14. At the time, was the all-time world record. And I played college football at Appalachian, and now I just coach the best weightlifter. I coach a lot of strength and conditioning athletes too. I coach Tommy Bohannon, one of the best fullbacks in the NFL. Coach Kate Carney, who's he's a running back at Wake Forest, who rushed for 1,010 yards last year. So that's about it, you know. Coach some awesome lifters, and I love to teach people about lifting.
There you go. How did you make that transition from being in the sport of powerlifting for so long into getting now into where you're coaching some of the best Olympic lifters in the U.S.?
Well, you know, I started, believe it or not, in weightlifting. Like, I played college football, mm-hmm. and my strength and conditioning coach was like, you know, hey, you're definitely not playing in the NFL, which I knew, you know. I'm 5'7", white boy. It's not happening. So, well, there's a few out there, but not me. Yeah. And so he said, but you're really strong, so maybe you should try weightlifting. Because we did it. I was lucky because this was the 90s, and most strength coaches, you know, did not teach snatch or clean and jerk. But I happened to be with one of the few, which is Mike Kent, who was University of Florida until just like a couple years ago. So he's still rolling in the industry. So anyway, believe it or not, on a whim, I just moved to Colorado Springs. I drove, you know, what was it, 23 hours. I had $200 to my name. It just somehow worked out. And anyway, so I did that sport first.
Okay. And
then in 1999, roughly, my father was diagnosed with terminal lung cancer. Mm. So I made the decision to move back to Carolina to be with him. And then, you know, I still wanted to compete at something, so – powerlifting you can do no matter where you are. So I started powerlifting, and it's been a rough transition back to weightlifting because people know me as the powerlifter, and a lot of the American coaches have always been like, you know, what's a powerlifter, you know, doing, trying to teach weightlifting. Yeah. And just trying to make them super strong. He doesn't know technique, but the truth is they're weightlifting first, and I do understand technique, and I love that sport. It was my first love. It's just, you know, I happen to just be better at powerlifting, but I honestly believe that most of us are able to coach things that we're not incredible at better than we could coach. I'm better at weightlifting than I am powerlifting as far as coaching.
Yeah.
Powerlifting came easy. I just was strong. And I didn't have to work very hard. But weightlifting, You know, I never made it to the Olympics, never made the World Championships. I just was pretty good, made it to the Olympic Training Center with some amazing weightlifters.
Yeah.
It was a great experience, but I couldn't master the sport. So I spent my life trying to understand it like the rest of us. And
yeah.
So that's it.
Well, that's been obviously our goal as coaches, is to always try to master something that cannot be mastered. And it's just that day in and day out grind that I love, you know?
You do.
Well, one of the big reasons I wanted to have you on is because I love the information that you share as a coach. And one of the big things I know that resonates is you always say that obviously as coaches, our goal is to also help empower those who are going to follow us one day. Right. And one of the things that I see is that a lot of up-and-coming coaches that are trying to speak to other people nowadays, it's almost like in a way to get noticed, they make these very black and white good versus evil statements that there's absolutes in training. You know, some people say single leg squats are everything because we're always in single leg or reciprocal stance, and bilateral training is horrible. And, you know, either way, but it's like that works for a point for some people because controversial topics get people known. It gets awareness to them. But in the end, I feel like the more and more that I'm in the game that we're in, the more I come back and I'm like, I don't feel like there's as many absolutes as I once thought. So I'd love to get your thoughts as like, what do you feel like are some of the absolutes to training that you've
honestly
seen?
Honestly, the only two or three I can think of is like, you know, knee valgus is eventually going to hurt your knees. The opposite to varus, however you want to pronounce it, it's not good either. And I would say also flexion of the spine when you're squatting. Mm-hmm. You know, that's not good. And besides that, like, I can't think of any absolutes. I think if you see somebody number one, I call an absolute anything that's going to hurt you. So if something's going to hurt you, like knee valgus, it's an absolute. And the other one is if it's 100% the best way to get you the most weight, that becomes an absolute too. But there's just way too many different techniques of, you know, snatch, clean, jerk, squat, bench, and deadlift that actually end up breaking world records and do them safely. So you can't call them, whatever you think is absolute, you can't call an absolute anymore. There's more than one way to do it. You know, there's, you know, some people pull with their butts high in the air, some people pull with their butts low in the air. World records are broken both ways, so no longer an absolute anywhere. So that's really summarizes this. Maybe, you know, flexion of the spine during squatting, and then, you know, knee valgus or varus is bad. So besides that, you know, just things we think, but you can't, there's not a lot you can prove with science. There's things that you can, you know, deduct from science, but you can't prove it. So
for sure. What are some of the things that you've seen just over your years as coaching that people once took as absolute or that you've maybe changed your mind on over the past years?
Oh, bunks, you know, like, you know, spreading the floor, you know, a lot, you know, I've heard of, like, there's a couple, like when squatting, they would always say, you know, spread the floor, you know, it may or may not be a good cue, or, you know, there's multiple cues. There's also like, you know, grab the ground and screw it. External rotation may or may not be a good cue, but neither one are absolutes. There's things to try. You know, talking to the powerlifting coach today at Eleco, he was saying the same thing. It just depends on the person. So there's definitely no absolute. Sitting way back, I definitely like, you know, your cue of like back then down, you know, is great. But like, when, you know, I used to think back was the best. But, you know, that creates so much hip flexion that you can't get low. And so in weightlifting, it's definitely not an absolute. Actually absolute not to do that. Absolutely don't do that. So those would be a couple, but like, you know, where you might think, you know, your butt should be in relation to a snatch or to a clean or a deadlift. You know, a lot of people think that they're completely opposite, that the stance for a clean is opposite of the stance for deadlift. You know, after I wrote the book on the pulling science and after talking to multiple coaches and looking at all the research, there's definitely no absolute on where that should be. Depends on the person, anthropometrics, you know, where you feel the strongest, what produces the best result, but there's definitely no absolute. So.
Yeah. Talking about that right there, I know you and me talked a while back about this and when you were writing that blog, and I want to know a little bit sort of the overview. What was the big difference between a conventional deadlift and then the way in which a weightlifter would perform pulls from the ground?
I know a lot of people are not going to believe me, but after doing the research and after I interviewed over 100 really good coaches. These are the top coaches and athletes in the country that I know. And at the end of it, all that I could, you know, figure out would be that the intent. So in a clean, you're going to try to stay over the bar. And then in a deadlift, you're trying to get behind it as soon as possible. Trying to get behind it, hips through. Clean, trying to stay over as long as possible. Other than that, not a lot of change, you know, not a lot of difference. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely not. Even where the eyes, you know, I would, as a coach in weight, in powerlifting, I definitely don't care. You know how a lot of people do the neutral spine and maybe the eyes are slightly down. I would definitely not recommend that in the clean, but I can't say it's an absolute. You see some Chinese do it and they're the best in the world. But in my experience, I would say maybe the eyes up slightly in the clean, but really just intent is all I can 100% say is an absolute.
Yeah. Well, what are you looking for in their back positioning? Because I know some elite powerlifters, obviously, in just performing a conventional deadlift, they're allowing maybe even a little bit of a slightly rounded spine, but they lock it in place and try to move mostly about the hips. Yeah. Whereas with weightlifting, usually we're going to be in that slightly extended position and maintaining that through the initiation of the first pull.
That would be, I would agree. You know, I definitely try to teach most of my athletes in deadlifting to still keep a neutral spine. But okay. I know that once you're elite, you know, I think the research doesn't support that it would hurt you. However, you know, being friends with Stuart McGill, you know, I still am not, you know, if you can deadlift really well with a neutral spine, I would recommend that.
Yeah.
But I can't say an absolute. I can't say that we, you know, but I just err on the side of whatever he says, you know. And so he knows more about spines than I do. I'm going to try, but, you know, once my guy is like an elite, he's trying to win the world championships in powerlifting. If, you know, if he has some flexion in the thoracic spine, I'm not going to stop it, you know, if that's the way he pulls it. I understand that it definitely shortens, you know, that spinal flexion moment a little bit and helps somewhat. But,
yeah,
I
think it's that sort of risk-reward ratio. I know in talking to Dr. McGill on our podcast a couple of times, he talked about how that slightly rounded spine and then moving about the hips, you're still slightly rounded and a little bit of flexion. And he goes, that's always going to be second best as far as the resiliency of the spine than that trying to maintain that neutral posture.
I agree 100%. You know, yeah. I'm always going to err on the side of whatever he says. You know, I don't know if people would judge me for, like, you know, not having my own, but I always, you know, if there's an expert in a certain, you know, section of the body or a certain part of science, I'm going to err. They've studied it more. So yeah. I got to go. And once you know that person, I know him really well. He's not one of those people who's, you know, too soft, what I would call soft. He loves strength, but he's just trying to say that, hey, in his experience, it appears that a neutral spine is the strongest and most resilient. So I got to go with what he said. I pulled, you know, my best deadlift is 365 kilograms in competition for 805 pounds. I pulled with a neutral spine. Like, you know, there's, you know, video or pictures of me deadlifting and my back is completely straight with that. So it worked for me because I started studying him way long ago. And
yeah. I mean, he's been putting out great stuff for such a long time. I guess the big thing is that for most people, when we're making those recommendations for neutral spine versus trying to maybe do that slightly rounded spine, is that most people are not going to be that elite of the world. So for most of us, that cue to try to maintain that neutral spine is going to be 95% of the time. That's the cue that you need to be going with, no matter if you're doing a deadlift or pulling from the floor.
100%. So that would be an absolute for me. I'm not saying for it, but if you're not a world champ, like you're not that elite powerlifter, neutral spine. Like if I'm coaching, you know, Joe Schmo, a 40-year-old accountant dude, 100% neutral spine, or cut him off as soon as it flexes.
Yeah, for sure. All right. So this this is a great transition into the next question that I had. Obviously, when we're looking at an athlete that is not even at that elite level where every lift is looking amazing, you know, for most of the athletes that we're coaching and that we're seeing, or just us in the gym, we're never perfect. We're always, you know, working to try to get better and better. And the way in which we decide whether or not it's time to go up in weight or take a step back, it can be difficult for some people, especially if they're training by themselves. And I wrote an article a long time ago, and I called it just a way to try to categorize our different types of lifts as far as the quality goes. I called it just the technique continuum. And I said we have optimal technique on the left, which is what we're all striving for. Then you have that big chunk, which is good technique. And then you have flat out poor technique on the end. And I would 100%. Say, obviously, that poor technique is going to be things like knee valgus. It's going to be things like having that back completely rounded over as you're pulling the ball from the ground.
Right.
And I guess I want to take your take on, obviously, as a coach, and you're pushing these athletes that are, you know, going to these national championships and international championships. When do you know when it's time to say, hey, that lift wasn't pretty, do it again, or take weight off, or coach, you know, when to try to cue them up? Like, when do you hold an athlete back as far as, like, when you see that lift isn't great looking, but you want them to continue pushing weight, but you don't want them to continue into a cycle where you're reinforcing poor technique by allowing them to move into a bad position over and over?
All right, so here's an easy way to do it, in my opinion. Like, number one, if it's one of those absolutes that might hurt them. Mm-hmm. So, like, I'll use Morgan and or Ryan, my two youth that are so good. Like, if I see, like, any valgus, which we're working on a lot right now with a few of my youth athletes, mm-hmm. by putting, you know, a strap on their knee and having them push against it,
yeah.
you know, to rework that, the knee to toe alignment. But, like, if that's a problem, we're changing right there. And another one would be a good way to do that is simply bar path. Like, that you can't cheat.
Yeah.
Like, if you have a really good bar path, which means that the bar never crosses in into that, you know, original vertical line through space, if they have a good bar, I'm going to say it's good. Because, you know, if you can have a technique to where it always stays behind, I'm going to say I'm okay with that. Mm-hmm. The minute that changes, then we got to look at why that's changing and, like, start to work on things. Example being Morgan right now, who is doing unbelievable. He's like 5 kilos off the world record in clean and jerk. However, we've taken, you know, here's a funny thing too. Like, we've taken a big step back in the snatch to rework some mechanics that would hopefully lead to a better bar path. And now that I've done that, it's so funny. You're going to get criticized no matter what you do. So yeah. I'm doing it. I'm taking steps back. So now his snatch is kind of what they think is plateaued, but it's really not. It's just I've taken steps back to rework this technique.
Yeah.
And so I did that a long time ago too with his jerk. Like, you know, there was a moment where his jerk was terrible. Now it's beautiful. I'd be hard pressed to say there's a coach out there that would disagree that his jerk for a 16-year-old guy doing 190 kilos is not pretty darn perfect.
Yeah.
So now we're doing thing in snatch because his bar path was messed up, which tells me, hey, yeah, he's definitely not. Couple things he does is, like, you know, as he starts to pull, sometimes the bar might drift forward, you know, his butt might come up. And the second one, he, you know, is not staying over the bar long enough. He's getting a little anxious and he's getting more, I say, behind the bar too soon, which causes horizontal displacement of the barbell. And so we've done a lot to change that. So I'm predicting a really big jump at the American Open. I think a lot of senior athletes are going to be shocked by this youth athlete. And there might be a few people not going to Pan Ams because of it, but
yeah, it's been awesome to watch his progress over the years. I remember when I think you first tagged me in one of his things on Instagram like 4 years ago,
yeah.
and where he's at now. I mean, it's crazy to see his progress.
And you have to admit, even, you know, you've seen the changes in the movement and technique.
Oh yeah,
very precise on his movement. And, like, I really want to thank you in front of your entire audience. Like, we're going to you sent me those tests to do.
Yeah.
If we can look at and change some of his squat technique. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to apply that. So I'm going to actually send it because I'm in Sweden right now. I'm going to send it to his mom. His mom is going to do it.
Very
she's
cool.
Brilliant too. Crystal Smart. She's a champion master's in nursing and she's a CSCS. So she's going to do it and give us the feedback and with your help.
Yeah.
That's another thing. I think a lot of coaches out there can learn from this. Instead of, like, getting so upset with people and, like, you know, because you might not be getting the attention, how about learn from experts? So, obviously, you're a PT. I'm not. I didn't go. I'm not. I don't want to be. No offense to you. And you probably don't want to be a strength coach. But I can learn from you and telling me, like, what's causing some of these, you know, asymmetries. And I can't wait to apply it to Morgan. And I think a lot of coaches should do more of that and less of talking.
Yeah, so. I mean, I think the big thing is just dropping that ego and knowing, like, hey, we're out here to help the athlete get as good as they can at their sport. Yeah, and the best way to do that is just find that team approach.
Right.
You know, it's less about me and more about that athlete. And if we can take that team approach and have the best of all worlds come together, that's where we get the best outcomes in the long term.
I agree 100%. I really believe the benefit I have over a lot of guys is because I already have my identity. I was a world champion powerlifter. I don't need Morgan or Ryan to make me cool.
Yeah.
I did my own thing. And so all I want to do is help my athletes. That is it. Yeah. Like, I don't care. They're going to be in the Olympics, not me.
Yeah.
Like, I might be on the sideline cheering them on. Mm-hmm. So I'm basically a cheerleader. So, like, who cares?
Yeah.
Like, if it means I'll ask 100 people, if I'll take advice from 100 people, if it helps that person.
Yeah, exactly. For everyone listening to this, what we're talking about is watching Morgan lift. We viewed a squat from his side, and it was, I don't even know how much it was. It was, what, maybe 230 for five or something like that?
Yes, that was 230, 230 kilograms for five.
So he is crazy, crazy strong, and I'm very excited for his future. But what we saw is that whenever you viewed his squat from the side, you could see that his right-sided bar path dipped forward a little bit. At the very, very bottom of the squat. So we were just a little bit off balance. And a lot of times what we see is when you look from the side, you want to see that bar track vertically over the middle of the foot, showing that the body's in balance and then producing efficient balanced power. Well, if that right side was dipping forward, that means that we're just shifting and twisting just a little bit, which means even though he's not having pain right now, there's just a little bit of inefficiency in the lifting. And if we can clear that up and uncover what's the issue, is it ankle mobility or hip mobility or stability issue somewhere, it's just going to allow him to be that much more efficient in producing that much more power in the future.
And like he turns when he cleans and jerks. He starts as he cleans and as he jerks, and that's caused misses.
Yeah.
He gets rotating too much and he can't keep up with it and the bar drops forward.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping too that it will lead to improvements in his clean and jerk as well as his squat. I mean, squat's important. The ability to produce force, but he has a ton of that. What I'm really looking for is to create, is to help these asymmetries, and it helps with the spinning too.
So. Yeah, and the idea of being able to see the movement problem and try to fix it before it becomes a learned like problem, you know, or turns into an injury. Because the thing is that the longer you lift with an asymmetry, the longer you lift with knee cave or a twist, you teach your body that that's the way to move. So I remember seeing, I don't know if you remember back in the day, Zach Schlender. He was a big lifter. So Zach used to always twist when he would catch his snatches.
Right.
And it just became a thing. And I mean, it's been a long time since we've worked together, but I mean, Zach would always twist to the left side, I believe. And it's eventually your body starts learning that that's the way to move. And it's obviously the more asymmetry you have, the more twist you have, the less efficient you can be in your lifting, especially with a barbell sport.
Right. I've seen people, you know, that gets worse and worse. I've watched a boy start spinning and it literally turned into a helicopter. It got so bad to where it flew out of his hands. It started slowly and got more, and then he lost it. So yeah, like don't ignore it. Like that's not normal, y'all. So
yeah.
If you're spinning, it's not cool. You know, if you can fix it, fix it. Some things might not be fixable and, but try at least get someone like yourself. You know, a try. We had, you know, Ryan Grimsland, who is right now ranked number one in the youth. You know, he's one. Morgan's two. He's a little bit older than Morgan, but he was turning on everything, on just a front squat. He would spin, and then we worked a lot on stabilizing his trunk, and it's helped a ton. So now he just set a major. He set a PR front squat and a PR back squat with zero spin, and it's.
Wow.
That was big, and because we addressed it, we didn't didn't ignore it. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to be like some of these coaches who gets a great athlete and then ignores these things because they're setting all these records. And like, I'm going to try to make. I want these boys to be healthy too when they're my age. I don't want them to be all beat up like me. I want them to have functioning lives.
Yeah, so. The thing that you said that I love so much is you said I don't want to be a coach that pushes an athlete and ignores the fact that they're moving poorly just because they're putting up big weights. And I think that's huge that so many people don't understand.
And too many people are making that mistake because it makes them look cool.
Yeah.
And once again, it goes back to the fact of like, is the athlete your identity or is he really someone you're trying to help? It's a big difference in those two statements.
Yeah. I remember seeing, and this is not a bash on CrossFit, but I remember seeing CrossFit HQ put up videos, I mean, a couple years ago, and the caption of it was, and I'm not going to tell the athlete's name, but so-and-so lifted a double PR in the front squat, like awesome work. And you could just see the technique and it was horrible. I mean, the knees were almost touching. And it's like, if we're going to glorify big weights for only the sake that it's big weight and not care at all about how that weight is being moved, we're giving the wrong impression to young athletes that are up and coming that, hey, it's all about the PR. And that's the only thing that matters. You know, we have to change that perspective.
Fitness group. they're the fitness leaders, you know?
Yeah, like, exactly.
Those people are supposed to be make you more healthy. Like, mm-hmm. absolutely not. There's no way you can sell me on the fact that valgus is okay, you know? Yep. You know, you might say, hey, this person is like the top 1% and they're going to the Olympics. You know, we've done everything to address it and they still have valgus when they set a world record. Mm-hmm. Then I'm going to be like, at that point, you know, you've done all you can do and this person is at the tip top and they're going to go, you know, they're going to go, you know, if they get hurt, they get hurt. But, you know, that's a big difference, you know?
Yeah. Talking about valgus, I know one of the things that grinds my gears, if you want to say, is when athletes will say, well, what about the Chinese athletes who use valgus as a technique, saying that they teach valgus? And I'm like, well, first off, you can't group an entire nation into one method of treatment. There's or coaching. There's many coaches, and probably just like the U.S., how many millions of athletes are in China and how many, you know, thousands of coaches are there? There's not one methodology. But even then, I think it's because these athletes will see a very elite Chinese lifter that will maybe catch a clean and their knees come in. And they'll say, well, because he's elite and he's lifting that way, that's got to be something that they coach. No. So I should allow that in my own lifters.
Oh, no. No way. You can't, like, you know, just because somebody does something doesn't mean you should do it no matter who you are. Plus, you're talking about the top 1%. You know, if someone gets as good as Lou and they have some valgus, do what you want. But until then, try to work towards, you know, doing it proficiently. Mm-hmm. And, like, I hate when people are saying the Chinese do X. Well, look, I've met them. I've watched them in person. And there's no two Chinese that lift the same, just like Americans. Like, Lou lifts – I think Lou, as I was how to pronounce his last name, mm-hmm. lifts a lot like Europeans. He stays over the bar. He doesn't do what people say is, you know, is the Chinese method. I don't think there is, man. There's certain things that they try to get across. Like, maybe they try to, you know, not spend a lot of time at the top. But they all do it differently. And so, like – quit saying the Chinese do X. And, like, you know, I've written articles about valgus, and like I said, if you get to the tip top and when you catch like a near world record weight, then hey man, if you have some valgus, I'm not gonna say anything to you.
Yeah.
You probably know it's slightly dangerous, but you're at the tip top. Just when I was powerlifting, when I was at the tip top, I knew good and well that an injury was right around the corner at any moment.
Yeah.
But do you want your youth athlete doing that? No. You don't want your youth athlete, you know, nearing injury at any moment. You want them to have a long, you know, illustrious career. So
Let's give some practical takeaways for the listeners. If they're lifting by themselves, which I know a lot of people, they're doing their own thing in their garage gym, or they're lifting with themselves, or they may not have a very qualified coach to lift with them. What are some different ways in which they can analyze their technique? Like, should they set up a camera? Would you say, like, in a side view, if they're doing a clean or a snatch, to see their bar path? Or what are some of the ways in which you would say, this is a way that you can analyze your technique and some, maybe a few different cues that they could look for to see, are you doing or not doing this?
You can't go wrong by, you know, taking a simple bar path app. You can get it on your phone, you know, and yeah, it's got to be straight from the side, because, for it to work properly, it's got to be direct angle. Like you told me to video Morgan's squat, same thing. And so what is that? Iron
Path or something like that?
Yeah, Iron Path is the one I use. And it's it works great. You can't go wrong with that. But it's sometimes good, too, as a weightlifter, too, to get from all the angles. Because you want some from behind to really see the, you know, the flexion of the spine, and also to see symmetries. And then you also want some from the front. But if the majority from the side, I would say, would be great. And then, you know, get some, you know, there's a lot of online coaches out there or sending video. You do it all the time, analyze your people's videos on Instagram, which is, man, people have no idea how lucky they are. Someone as good as you to, you know, do it for free on Instagram every day.
Yeah. But,
that would be some good starts, I would say.
Gotcha. Yeah, and I know I've sent a number of people that are like, do you do online coaching? I'm like, I can help you with your movement, but I'm not doing any, like, I don't have time to program for people. And that's not, you know, that's not where I want to go into. Like, I know there's people that's your full-time job is programming and the actual coaching of the Olympic lifts every single day. So I'm like, go talk to Travis. Here's his website.
And I think a lot of coaches could learn so much from that, because on my side of things, a lot of strength and conditioning coaches are trying to pretend that they're PTs, and, like, you know, you'll see them. Someone will come in and say something hurts, like my low back hurts.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, try X, Y, and Z. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm gonna, the most professional thing I do is like the minute, if you tell me your low back hurts, and then my next question is going to be, you know, does it go away when you warm up, you know, or just kind of achy?
Yeah.
But if it does not, I'm going to immediately yield to someone like you and say, I have really good referral sources. I have two people, a chiropractor and a PT. The chiropractor I've been working with since 2002, and so 17 years has been my go-to.
Yeah.
And my PT has been almost the same, like 2004. So it was, you know, 15 years. And so I will immediately refer out, depending on what they tell me. And that's my, you know, my clients respect me so much because I have a really good referral source. So if you're a strength and conditioning coach, personal trainer out there, I would go shop around until I found the best PT and or chiropractor in my area and refer out is what I would do.
Yeah. I mean, just having that network of people that you can send other people to, and understanding, again, just like we talked about before, like understanding it's not a bad thing to say, hey, I don't know. Like, go see this person. Like, they have a better knowledge than I do on this topic. And that's how that person gets better. Like, you don't have to be the ultimate end all be all for everything, because no one is the Renaissance man of training, you know?
No, dude, you know, I will actually say I don't know and I don't want to know. You know, I did not go to PT school for a reason. Like, in January, I'm going to start working towards my PhD in biomechanics. I am going to PT school. I don't want to be you. I think I respect you. And my chiropractor was in my wedding. Like, I love the guy. But, like, I don't want to be that either. And so, like, you know, if I did, I would go be that. I wouldn't try to pretend I'm that in my practice. And so I see people, like, strength and conditioning coaches, I'll be visiting their place, and they're doing what they think is active release technique. Or they're doing, you know, like other techniques that a PT might do. And I'm like, man, you know, why? Like, go be a strength and conditioning coach or go back to school and be a PT. But don't try to pretend you're something that you're not. Like, there's avenues. Go do it.
Yep. So, exactly. Yeah. The last big question I had, topic I really wanted to get to, I know you wrote a blog on your website, and it was called Two Simple Methods That Can Allow You to Hit a PR Today, kind of thing. And it was like, you know, we have all these programs that are set to help you PR in 12 weeks and things like that. And we can get really into the science of programming and stuff like that. But you were like, let's drop all that and just go, here's two simple things that you can integrate into your training today that can yield massive results. And I wanted to go into those. What are your two simple methods?
You put me on the spot real quick, but I remember. I was freaking out, but I was gonna remember. Oh yeah, it's like a really good warm up. You know, I do the McGill Big Three, which is like the side plank, the bird dog, and the curl up. Mm-hmm. You know, along with, you know, things that are specific to me. Like, you know, everyone knows that follows me knows I have a hip replacement, and my other one is bad. And so I do things that, you know, are going to, number one, recruit my gluteus maximus, and I'm going to do things that lengthen my psoas, and I just warm up really well besides that. And so that's a good one. You know, I know when, or another thing I use, you know, Donnie Thompson's the body tempering too. Like, so those three things combined, like pinpointing the stability and the, you know, the recruitment, doing the big three, and then, you know, the body tempering, putting those three things together with a really good barbell warm up will definitely lead to PR. And another thing, people just don't know how to brace. Like, I don't want to say his name because I'm embarrassed. He's a great guy, but I was at a camp. It was a Team USA, man. These were dudes that were, you know, they were bidding to go to the World Championships in 2017. And there was a guy, and I said, I was talking to him about bracing. I said, you don't understand how to use the belt and brace, right? He's like, I have no idea. I'm like, but these were the best of the best. So never as coaches assume because somebody is good that they know the most simple of things. So I taught this young dude, like, you know, how to brace, how to use the belt. And he set a PR that day. It was amazing. And I'm like, man, can't believe you've made it this far. No coach has ever, you know, stopped that teaching bracing. So, like, so, you know, those two things would be the easiest way. Like, you know, bracing, like, not only – a lot of people say, you know, get a tight belt on, take a deep breath, and push out against your belt. But if you really practice, and, like, you know, Andy Galpin talks a lot about bracing like a tire. Like, you know, you brace out sides and the back, you know. Mm-hmm. And so it's huge, and a lot of really good powerlifters get that instinctively, you know.
Yeah.
But not everybody. And so, like, to be able to teach a good warm up and good bracing can lead to PRs like right away. So for start sure. there, and then work out, you know.
Yeah, definitely. I saw in your warm up part of the article, you talked about using like a belt squat and doing some things.
Oh yeah,
belt squat. How do you like to use the belt squat as a warm up?
Almost anything, because, you know, it pulls you out of extension. And so it turns anything. Well, if you do the marks, it starts to activate the glutes. But like some basic squatting on the belt squat, as long as you really, you know, make a lot of people just do it and they never think to actually, you know, activate the glutes and stand all the way up.
Yeah.
They'll stop short because it's pulling you out of extension. But if you make sure that you get extension, man, it's a great thing. And it really helped me, like, let me get this straight. In 2010 is when they first told me I needed a hip replacement, mm-hmm. and I didn't actually get it done until 2019. So,
oh, wow.
I was able to survive 9 years by doing things like that. The belt squat was like the last 2 or 3 years I could do the belt squat, and it allowed me, it helps you to get enough clearance. You know, it helps slide the femur
yep.
enough back to where there's some clearance, and you can. To squat without pain. So.
For sure. What type of things do you have your athletes do as far as warm up goes when they walk in for a training day?
Specific. So it's very specific to them, you know.
Okay.
Like, you know, like, believe it or not, ironically, Morgan and Ryan have had small hip injuries. Mm-hmm. So they're going to do some things that are similar to that. Sarah, my really good powerlifting girl, has, you know, her back has always been a problem. So the McGill Big Three is an absolute must because it creates that stiffness around the spine. So it just depends, you know, if you've got like hamstring issues, or if you have, you know, if it's a powerlifter and we're doing bench press and you have like shoulder issues, we're going to do a better shoulder warm up. So it just depends.
Yeah.
The person, everybody's different. Like, even if people think, you know, a lot of people might have similar programs, but there's differences they might not notice, but to me, I noticed they're big differences.
Yeah.
So it's an individualistic approach. It's not gonna be anybody doing the same thing, you know. Some people, if you're like Sarah, same girl, we're not gonna do a ton of hip or hamstring because she's hypermobile.
Yeah,
and she's, you know, and I don't want to just keep stretching something that's already, you know, like lengthened. So
yeah.
You just can't say, hey, here's the warm up to do. I'm just saying, pinpoint your, you know, where are you, you know, where are you tight or shortened, and where are you too lengthened? And like, try to tighten the lengthen and try to lengthen the tightened. So try to lengthen the shortened and shorten the tightened, the lengthened. Does that make sense? Yeah.
For sure. I mean, that's the big thing is just having that individualized approach. I think the thing I never want to see is walk into a gym and seeing everyone do this exact same warm up every time. Like, while there may be a few things that can help most people, it can't be the same for every single person, because then you're not efficient and effective with addressing their individual weak links prior to getting under the barbell. So they're not going to be as efficient whenever they start lifting.
I think some things that are like that might be universal would be come in and, like, you know, do some like basic something to raise the body's temperature up, the internal, you know, temperature, like ride the bike or jump some rope or start moving. And then, you know, you can never go wrong with the McGill Big Three. I think so. We've noticed too, it just increases performance, because, you know, you get that proximal stiffness will lead to, you know, just a performance a lot of times. And then just a really good barbell warm up and not rushing. That's the key. Like, that does not work long. I know people are busy. If you just come in and grab a barbell and start lifting, I mean, over time, that will lead to injury. So
yeah, that's the one thing that I see a lot of on the internet when I'll make a post about warming up. And I'll say, hey, you need to take at least 10 to 15 minutes to get a good warm up on before you grab the barbell. And people will say, I'm too busy. Like, I've got this. I'm like, you cannot be too busy to maintain your body correctly, because if you just come in,
skip the workout, then
if you get right into the gym and the first thing you do is grab a barbell, or some people say, well, I can't squat deep until I put weight on the bar. And I'm like, well, then clearly you're dealing with some sort of mobility issue,
right? Fix that, man. Fix
that. You know, exactly. Like,
that is bad, especially if you're a weightlifter. That will lead to, you'll never be good. Impossible. If that's what you're saying and you want to be an Olympic weightlifter, that's not going to work. Like, do something to fix your mobility. And if you're a power lifter, do something so you won't be wrecked like me and have hip surgery at 45 years old, you know? So
yeah,
either way, bad thing.
Yeah. And that mobility is so key. And I think a lot of times people, especially I see like my heavyweights, is they will sort of play off that because they're so big, they don't need that mobility. I mean, then we look at guys like Shane Hammond. I mean, look how mobile he was. I mean, the guy was ass to grass, 1,000 pounds.
I saw it.
Yeah, crazy. I've only seen the videos, and it's, I mean, like, in getting into that front rack position. You know, some people say, well, I'm too big. Like, if you have the correct mobility, you can be a very big person and get into a purposeful front rack position. You don't have to arm stress.
Yeah, there's plenty of super lean, super jacked. Have you ever seen Lou? That dude is jacked, and he gets right into a rack position. So the amount of muscle you have has nothing to do with how that muscle moves and how, you know, if it's lengthened or not, or optimally lengthened. But, like, yeah, Shane Hammond, bro, I was there. I watched with my own eyes him squat 1,008 pounds. I had just won. It was the junior. It was a junior nationals. Mm-hmm. And I just won. It was in Pennsylvania. It was in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. And I had won my weight class. I'm sitting there with my medal. I was a young, you know, punk kid.
Yeah.
And I was sitting there with my friends, and then I'm watching Shane, and he squatted 1,008 pounds, and I took my medal and put it in my shirt. I'm
like, that's awesome.
It was amazing. Like,
yeah.
Then we got to, when I was at the Olympic Training Center, so was he. And now we're still good buddies. And, like,
yeah,
he's just such an amazing guy.
Yeah.
One of the best big athletes I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, yeah. Well, I heard stories he could, or I think I've seen a video. It's a standing backflip, correct?
Oh, so that's just the beginning. Standing backflip, he could dunk. Now he's 5'9", like, at the minimum 360. Probably a little bigger than that, but 5'9", 360, and could get off the ground, and not long arms.
Yeah.
That had nothing to do with it. No, because he was not a great deadlifter. He was, you know, he was perfect arms for weightlifting. It could dunk. 5'9", 360. Imagine how much power that man produces. Imagine him, imagine playing football and him hitting you.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Kill you.
Crazy. I know there's a lot of sports scientists out there that would have loved to track all the different things with his lifting. Oh, you know.
Oh, I will. You know, I'm hoping he'll, even at his age right now, I guarantee if that man wanted to come back to weightlifting, and I love Kane Wills, but I don't think anybody beats him in America. Like, he's just unbelievable. He's a specimen, man. And I love Lasha. However, I got my own feelings about that. Like, he's probably aided. But, like, Shane, lifetime drug-free, did all these things.
That's awesome.
Incredible.
So. Yeah. You made reference to, obviously, Lou just being a completely ripped human being, but being a weightlifter. I want to ask you that one thing that just popped into my head. Obviously, there's the idea of looking like a bodybuilder, moving like a weightlifter type of thing. How much, like, I guess you would say, bodybuilding-esque assistant work do you have any of your lifters do? Or is it strictly, I mean, if your goal is to be an Olympic weightlifter, you are doing mostly Olympic lifting and not as much, or do you have like an off season for those type of things?
No, we're accessory work year round. Just like,
okay.
You know, and that's where, like, you know, people always say that, you know, I'm trying to bring West Side Barbell to weightlifting. It's not true, but, you know, I've learned a ton from Louis Simmons. And at the end of the day, anyone who's in this industry is doing something that was made popular by Louis Simmons.
Oh, for
whether
sure.
You want to admit it or not. But one of my biggest things is, like, is trying to target weaknesses. You know, by using, we have a pretty good test that we put people through. Mm-hmm. It's several items long, and like, and we can pinpoint like asymmetries. We can pinpoint flat out weaknesses, and then we target those with hypertrophy work. You know, whether it be like when we went, we visited Louis in Westside Barbell. And so we tested athletes, their glutes, their low back capacity, and hamstring work. And as a whole, our hamstrings were super strong. Our low back capacity was super high. I'm assuming because we pull all the time, you know. Mm-hmm. But one thing that was weak, believe it or not, and, you know, most weightlifters have huge butts, but they were not strong glutes. And so that's the reason why we got the belt squat machine, is that we turn everything into a glute machine or glute exercise. And so we do a lot. Even, you know, leading up to a meet, we could be at the week of the world championships, and just like the Chinese, you know, I'm going to prescribe the accessory work. It's going to be stuff that's like not really doesn't have a high eccentric component. So I don't want to create a lot of muscle damage from that, because need to save that for the specific list. But we're going to do a lot of things that, you know, is a lot of metabolic stress, you know, type movements like a shoulder, you know, lateral raise, or we still might do back extensions. We're not going to do RDLs because it's going to, you know, create too much muscle damage, but we still do back extensions.
Yeah.
So we're still doing, might not do, you know, pull-ups, but we're still going to do rows, you know, things that will go right along and keep what we've, you know, if you do those things, this is a quote from Lewis Simmons. If you do certain movements to get stronger, why would you stop doing those movements when you need to be the strongest? And so,
yeah, I like that idea. So definitely the assisted work that is isolated still has its purpose and its goal and its place in your training program year round. And so you can still do bodybuilding-esque things to help, you know, build strength in particular areas and still continue progressing with your weightlifting skills. What do you take on as far as machines go? Like, I know Louis obviously is very big on like the hyperextension machine.
Yeah, he does the reverse hyper.
The reverse hyper, yeah.
I would say I'm a very Stu McGill approach on that. For some people not. I'm not an absolute on anything. It just depends. Like, you know, does a person need it because of a certain weakness? Mm-hmm. You know, and can someone do it without getting hurt? And so the two, you know, it's got to be a yes and a yes, or I'm not going to do it. But the only machines that we might use, obviously everyone knows now, belt squat. Reverse hyper, we almost every human in my gym does something on the belt squat, but like reverse hypers may or may not happen, you know, depending on the person.
Yeah.
Some people are, you know, the reverse hyper can really aggravate, you know.
For so, sure. That's very true. Really,
you know, luckily we had Stuart McGill come to our gym. He just stopped in one day.
Oh, wow.
So he, you know, one of the things he showed us like a proper way to do, you know, the reverse hyper to make it as safe as possible. So I teach everyone that. But those are really the only two, you know, glute ham raise. Those are, you know, those are like machines, but not like selectorized. We don't have a lot of that.
Yeah.
But a cable machine, I have no problem with the with the cable machine to pinpoint certain things. But so really belt squat, reverse hyper, glute ham raise, those would be the three things that I think are super important.
How do you use your belt squat and program it in with the rest of your training? Because I know it's more than just let's stack some weights up and do just regular squats. Like, do you have any specific type of protocol or methods at which you're having your athletes do the belt squat?
Yeah, I'm going to use instead of like percent, because we're not going to max out in it, so I'm not going to use percentages. But what I'll use is like RPE. You know, and you can use RPE. You can use the RIR, the reps in reserve. You can use that. Either one of those, you know, and like you can either target the load on the machine or the load that you're using, or half and half, you know, keep it, you know, even. So so that would be it. But like, it would be relatively using, you know, the RPE, and we're going to start with like, you know, accumulation phase will be higher, you know, reps, and we never really go below fives when it's like, I don't.
Yeah.
I'm not saying you couldn't, but like, we don't go below like a 5 RM in an accessory movement, because really the only thing we're targeting would be hypertrophy. We're not going to try to take it into an absolute, you know, strength phase.
Gotcha.
Just add muscle to a weak spot, and then, you know, the focus of absolute strength will be the movements that are more directly related to the, you know, snatch, clinch, or if
for
you're
sure.
talking about, you know, powerlifting, squat bench deadlift.
So the belt squat's a very good way to get more volume in for hypertrophy training for your specifically lower body, because there's no load on your upper body like that there would be with squats.
Yeah, I don't use it as a max. Now, Louis Simmons uses it sometimes as a max effort, you know, and I don't do that.
Yeah.
You know, I say, you know, with it, if it's maximum effort, it's either going to be like, you know, the primary lifts, certain modification of those, or – you know, movements that are directly related to those, like squatting or pulling, or like a press. So, but besides that, we're not doing absolute strength with anything accessory.
Gotcha. Are you usually programming your belt squats like on the same day as someone would squat, just sort of like as an accessory afterwards? Or are you doing that on the opposite day?
Totally, because, you know, with weightlifting, sometimes depending on the person, they're going to squat so frequently that, you know, you kind of have to.
Yeah.
You know, which is a whole nother topic, like how often. Right. But like, normally we're going to do, you know, the belt squat on the same day that we're going to squat and or pull, you know, may or may not be on the same day. It's like, these are questions, like, you know, once again, there's no absolutes.
True.
It's what, it's, you know, our programs are very individualized. And so, like, depends on what works for the person. You know, some people, like I said, you know, like Morgan is about to go through a squat every day, not squat every day, but squat quite often phase. And so, mm-hmm.
yeah,
you know, he'll probably have to do it. And then some people might have he might do it on a day where they do pulls. You know, it works really good on the, but say at the end of the day, like, the same joints are worked whether you're pulling or whether you're squatting. So it doesn't really
matter. For sure.
Things. Yeah.
What's your take on the squat every day programs that some people will do?
For a short amount of time, if you're trying to get a PR, yes. I doubt anyone on the earth would disagree that you might not push the weight up, but the problem would be like sustainability and, like, you know, for weightlifters, you know, mm-hmm. if you do it too long, you're gonna start breaking down, and squatting is not what we're competing in. We're competing snatch and clean and jerks. So
that's very,
you know,
true.
Short phases, I'm okay with it. You know, just like, you know, like a Bulgarian type, you know, phase is okay for short blocks for certain people. Mm. Certain people, even doing it 4 weeks could be, make them go way backwards.
Yeah.
So that's really keeping up with data on each of your athletes and making notes of what works, what doesn't, you know, what at what volumes did they see progress, at what volumes did they, you know, digress.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, again, it speaks to just finding a good coach that can help you. And even if that's an online coach that can help take your numbers and help you see, well, hey, what you're doing right now, like, we're not seeing any progress. You're actually plateauing or taking a step back because you're squatting too often, or you're not squatting enough. You're only squatting once a week. Let's bump that up to two or three times a week.
Once a week, I can't, you know, some powerlifters have gotten pretty good results. I think a lot of the really big ones, like the 275 and above type people, seem to do all right with, you know, like a once a week. But, you know, most people, you know, I think three is like a good starting for someone who's been training for a couple of years.
Yeah.
Three times a week is a good starting spot. And then from there, maybe I go to two or maybe I go to four. But, like, I'm not going to get outrageous because we're not competing in squats. Because, you know, like, I've had athletes in the past who were, like, literally I had one who, I love the guy, had the best squat in America, but, you know, needed to work on his jerk and snatch. And so, so really I didn't even care. There became a point where I didn't care what he squatted, you know, it didn't really matter.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't matter if you squat the house, if you can only clean and jerk so much in weightlifting, that's what we're competing in.
Exactly. You need to snatch a lot and clean and jerk a lot. So
exactly. Yeah. Well, man, thank you so much for taking time out of your day, Travis, to come on the show. It's been about an hour now and just so much information. It's been awesome just talking to you and learning from you. And I think we got to get you back on the show again, because I feel like we could just talk for hours on all things weightlifting.
Oh, yeah. I've been podcasting all day, and I probably wouldn't have done it if it wasn't you. You know, like,
oh, man.
You know, like, it's 11 o'clock almost here in Sweden. But, like, I'm always going to be on your show, man.
So, man, that means so much to me, Travis.
Do so well. Like, 2 years ago, you're here, and now you're way up here. And what a great guy for the people out there that are listening. You know, we're super lucky to have someone like you that is, like, open enough to put your information out there. Everyone wants to be so secret. And you're such a nice guy to do that. So.
I really appreciate that. It means a lot to me. Well, everyone listening to the show, go and follow Travis and Mash Elite Performance on Instagram. Check out his blog. If you are a weightlifter and you need some help in coaching, check out Travis and all the stuff that he does with Mash Elite. He is such a helpful person when it comes for Olympic lifting and programming and things that everyone needs. Where else can people find you and learn from you?
MashElite.com is my website. That's the big one. I'm actually getting pretty cool on Twitter. I really just found out recently, I really love Twitter because it's just teaching, a lot of conversations. So you can go to Twitter at Mash Elite.
There you go. Perfect. Yeah, follow him on Twitter and jump in on the conversation. If you guys enjoyed our podcast together, tag Travis and I at Mash Elite Performance and at Squat University on Twitter. And we'll jump in on the conversation and talk to you about any questions that you may have that we discussed today. So, Trav, again, thank you so much for coming on the show. For everyone out there, thank you for listening. If you will, share this around. And thank you so much from the bottom of my heart for listening to the Squat University podcast. Until next time, guys, happy squatting.
That's it for today, class, on Squat University by Dr. Aaron Horschig. For more exclusive content, log on to squatuniversity.com.